Here we go. We have about an hour. I don't mind to have spent the time that way. I think it's good for you to hear what we do, okay? Tene perim dambu dhamma shir. So now we are considering this is a huge lotus flower, okay? Like as big as this room. And it has four petals. The first tier of the lotus flower has four petals. Dhamma means petal. Petal in, well, that's a long story. Yeah, that's too long. Dindu, Samadupa, Park Lukmi Gyupa Hlasonyi. So in the front, on those four petals, are the 32 angels of Samadupa, Guhya Samaja Tantra, in the system of the Pakpa, the Arya, which in Buddhism means someone who has seen emptiness directly. It does not mean a white supremacist. Okay, and the Pakpa here is who? Can you guess? I think it's Arya Nagarjuna. Yeah, 99 it's Arya Nagarjuna. Okay. Mikyapa Akshobhya. So the 32 angels of Akshobhya in the system of Guhya Samaja, okay, are on the front petal. Yesu on the right hand petal, which is our left hand. We're talking about the front petals now. Are Dorje Jigche. Jigche, Yamantaka, or what does Yamantaka mean? Yeah, Yama means the Lord of Death, we talked about. Anta means the end, and it came into English as the word end. Ka means the one who does it. Yama, Anta, Ka. What? The one who slays death. I like it. Okay, Yamantaka. Dorje Jigche, sometimes they call him Vajra Bhairava, okay, the diamond slayer of death. Chuksum. There are. Do you see the Chuksum? I mean up here, the word Chuksum. In colloquial, you say Choksum. Okay, it's corrupted. The teens are corrupted in Tibetan, modern colloquial Tibetan. You don't say Chuksum. Nobody knows what you're talking about. You say Choksum. Same with 18, which is Chobge. Chobge. You don't say Chuge. You say Chob, and you pronounce the prefix letter, which is bizarre. Chopke. Okay. Dite la chusum. Choksum. Yundu, which is misspelled here, it should be G hyphen Y. Yundu korlo domba, which is what? Korlo in Tibetan is? Wheel. What's the Sanskrit for wheel? Chakra sambara. Okay. Chakra sambara. Okay. Luipe la reni. Luipa was an Indian yogi, a very great yogi, who's mentioned in the Hatha Yoga Pradipika in the list of lamas, in the parampara at the beginning, which is the traditional Hindu list of the lamas of the yoga tradition. He's there. Sometimes he's called the fisherman. Luipa means fish guts because he was a high yogi who lived on the banks of the Ganga near Varanasi and lived off of fish guts. He was a prince. And he decided his practice was more important, and he didn't want to go to work, so he ate fish guts that people threw out. Then they called him fish guts, which is Luipa. So in the Luipa system of Chakrasambhara Tantra, there are 62 angels. Okay. Then Gyaptu, in the back, are Ke Dorje, Hey Vajra. Okay. Ke is the Tibetan for the Sanskrit Hey. Hey, Vajra. Hey, what's hey mean in Sanskrit? Hey. It's the same, okay? Hey means hey. Like, hey, what's going on, man? His name is, hey, what's going on, man, Diamond. Hey, Vajra, okay? Hey, it's really, okay, in the Tibetans translated it as hey, Diamond, okay? Then there are nine angels who are Tupa Chen. Tupa means kapala, which means a skull. So they are holding a skull cup, okay? Why do you hold skull cups in Buddhism? I mean, the first time I was asked to hold one, it was really disgusting to me and repulsive. You know, I thought, oh, this could be anybody's head. This could be some child's head or somebody's mother or, you know, who knows, mass murderer. You want me to drink something out of this skull cup? And they say, yeah, and as you drink, remember someone will be using yours later. And then it becomes a practice of impermanence. And in Buddhism, impermanence is not meant to frighten you. It's meant to inspire you, okay? You don't know how long you have until your head is made into a skull cup. You better get going on the screenplay right away. Like, it's supposed to get you moving, okay? So that's why they use skull cups. So don't think it's some kind of drinking chicken blood thing, or it's not some gross thing. It has a very sincere... Jetsun Kapa used his mother's skull cup, okay? The founder of our lineage, the teacher of the first Dalai Lama, made a skull cup of his mother's skull because he wanted to remember her and death, and that he would die also. So he had a good life, okay? Okay. Yangna Mengakdar, you can also follow oral tradition, and on the right hand pedal would be Pargyu Kigyalpo, the king of the father tantras, which is Sangwadupa, Guyu Samanja, okay? On the yun, on the left, misspelled here RGYD, right? It should be RGYUD. On the left is the king of the mother tantras, which is Korlo Decho, Chakra Sambara, okay? And Dundu in the front, Pagyu Magyu Niki Ne Tsangwa. Ne misspelled. It should be G-N-A-D, not B-N-A-D. On the front are a being who incorporates the crucial points of both the mother and the father tantras, which is Dorje Jigje. Bhairava, okay? Nam, sound up, visualize it that way. Luke means system. Kyang Ye means you can also do it that way. So it's an option, right? Kyang Ye means there is such a system, okay? Whichever is more comfortable for you. Either way, you're going to be visualizing separately the faces of hundreds of angels. Good luck, okay? Rinpoche was very proud of the fact that he could do all 62 of the, you know, Samadupa. But anyway, I can't. I'm taking the single lama option. But it's my job to acquaint you with the tradition, and so it doesn't die. And it's your job to acquaint your students with tradition. Maybe somebody will choose to do it, and it will get them enlightened. So we're not allowed to, like, cut stuff because we don't feel like it, okay? All right, Kangdar Yang, Le Chokna. Kangdar Yang means, anyway, okay, he's going to, like, wrap up, thank goodness. Kangdar Yang, anyway, Le Chokna. Le Chokna means if your mind can sustain such a visualization, if you have the mental power to sustain such a creative power to sustain such a mental visualization, then Tendan Denbe Kinkor, the entire mandala of Ten and Tenba. Okay, Ten means the places where they live, and Tenba means the inhabitants of those places. Sometimes it's called Ne Chu. Here it's called Ten Tenba. The different paradises of the different tantric angels and the angels who inhabit those paradises, which is often a whole band of angels, like 62, okay? Kinkor is misspelled here. It should be Kiel. Kor Yongzong. Densanman Nukyang, if you're not capable of maintaining that, sustaining such a visualization, Hlat Sokor Yongzong, at least get the main lama and, you know, some of the retinue, immediate retinue of the main lama. Deya Manuna, if you can't even handle that, Tsokyang. So this Kyang is spelled differently from the Kyang, which means but. This Kyang has an R in front of it. This Kyang is used in the Tibetan word for the Ida channel, the left-hand channel in the yoga tradition, Ida. Kyangma means solitary channel, okay? So the Ida, as opposed to the Pingala and the Sushumna in the Tibetan tradition, is called Kyangma, okay? That Kyang means solitary. There's another spelling of the channel in Tibetan which suggests that it's not that, but I'm not going to get into that. But just be aware there could be different, okay? Kyang. So Kyang means The Tsol means the principal figure, your lama, kyang. Just by himself. You can't handle all these other guys hanging around. Just do your own teacher, okay? After many years of personal practice, you know, I don't know, 40 years, it's 40 years this year of trying, I would say stick to the single lama, but that's just my personal opinion. Gyang chok has two meanings. We talked about it. One means it's okay. One means a ritual. Choga. Which one is it here? It's okay. Don't stress. Just do the single lama. Don't stress about it. Chok, that's okay. Don't get into it. A lot of people get very, anal about their practice, and they get upset that they can't visualize 60. They only can visualize 61 deities. And it's just foolish. It's like in yoga, trying to do things that you cannot do. You know, you should always push the envelope, but you shouldn't sit there and beat yourself up that you can't do a handstand yet after 15 years. I don't care. I can't. And you should learn to push the envelope, but to be happy with where you are. Okay, that's fine. Chok means that's fine. Okay. But you're going to do it anyway. Okay. May we go another 5 minutes, okay? Just because then we'll do like an hour after that, okay? All right. I know you're tired, but we don't get a chance like this to pay for the place, which costs a lot of money. And to have all the teachers here and to everybody fly here and to have me alive at any given moment is special. So we should push it, okay? You'll thank me later. Dene, like, I'm planning on thanking Jenny in like 6 years or something. Dene means, then, Berim Nipar means on the second tier of the lotus, okay? The second tier of lotus petals. Dunkor Tsor Chepe Lameki Yidam. These are the four classes of Tantra, okay? The four traditional Indian classes of Tantra, okay? Secret teaching. On the there are four tantric deities that represent the four classes of Tantra on those petals, the second tier of petals, the four directions, okay? And there are little groups of tantric deities from each of the four classes. So it's a good excuse to talk about the four classes, actually, okay? The first one is called Lameki Yidam. Oh, Dunkor Tsor Chepe. Say Dunkor. Dunkor means what? By the way, it's always prenasal, even though it's only a second column letter. Don't ask me why. Dunkor. Yeah, Wheel of Time meaning Kala Chakra, okay? In current times, traditionally, only the Dalai Lama in some traditions, some other lamas are doing it, but in our lineage, only the Dalai Lama grants the Kala Chakra, and usually only once or twice in his life, up to now. And we're very fortunate that His Holiness has been able to fly around to many countries and grant it, I don't know, like 15 times. I think we had it in L.A. and Washington, D.C. and like that. Anyway, Dunkor Tsor Chepe. So the main figure on the second tier, on one of the petals, is Kala Chakra, the deity called Kala Chakra, Lame Yidam, along with the other Yidams of the Lame class of Tantra. Yidam sort of means like your guardian angel or something like that. Okay? It implies a tantric angel with whom you enjoy some kind of close relationship. Like personally, I feel closer to Vajrayogini Tantra than, say, Sangwat Guhya Samaja, okay? A certain tantra will call to you, and then another tantra will not call to you so much. And then the angel who is the primary teacher of that tantra is your yidam, okay? You might have one or two yidams, okay? Lameki Yidam. So there are the Anuttara Yoga class, the deities of the Anuttara Yoga class, which is the highest class of Tantra in India, in ancient times. Anuttara Yoga means unsurpassed yoga system. And that's yoga, okay? When people say, does Tibet have yoga? We say, yes. What do you have? We have Anuttara Yoga. When did Rinpoche, my teacher, start teaching Anuttara Yoga? I think around 1980. So we got 20 years of Anuttara Yoga. Did you do asanas? No. Okay, 20 years of yoga without asanas. Asanas we were allowed to do later. So asanas are considered very high in the Tibet, in the traditional tantra. Asanas are a form of tantric practice, but they are considered to be for special people at a high degree of accomplishment. Okay. But the fact that it has spread so widely in the world, the practice of physical exercises of yoga, the Tibetan lamas consider it a blessing. They think it's a sign of the times, and it makes them excited, okay? And they're happy about it. Okay. Lameki yidam. Sumbar. Oh, yeah. On the second tier of petals is Kalachakra with the other Anuttara Yoga deities. On the third tier of petals are the deities of the Neljorgyu, yoga. So that's traditional yoga in India, what you call yoga. Neljor means yoga. On the fourth tier are the Chögyu. This is a Charya Tantra, which means like activity tantra. And then on the fifth tier are Chagyu, the deities of Kriya class of tantra. So going from the lowest, it's Kriya, Charya, Yoga, and Anuttara Yoga, okay? How do the four classes of tantra differ in a broad sense? What puts a practice, so for example, the practice of Tara, the deity, the angel named Tara, she's included in two classes, okay? There's a lower way to practice her, and there's a higher way to practice her. What's the difference, generally? Do you remember? That could be one. Yeah, it's how external is the practice and how internal is the practice. So a person who's practicing one of the lower classes of tantra might do a lot of rituals. They will have bells, and they will be doing lots of water bowls, and they will make lots of deity little statues, and they will wear a big hat and special clothes and do a lot of external rituals. As you go higher in tantra, it becomes more, what do you call it? Introspective, right? And until you get to the highest stages of tantra, your practice is anonymous, completely anonymous. Someone says, do you think she's practicing tantra? They say, no, I never saw her do anything. She doesn't have a bell. She doesn't have a hat. She's just a normal person. And that's the goal of highest tantra, that you will become, you are anonymously practicing tantra in the world. At Paradise Cafe, you are thinking that the soup lady and the salad guy are male and female deities, okay? And you never say anything to them directly. You might say, how's the soup today? And she'll say, the soup is divine, you know? And then, I'm not kidding, okay? And then your tantric practice goes to that level. And you don't cut off chicken heads or have sex orgies or, okay, that's, I don't know who got that idea, but that's pretty weird in itself. It's a lot like saying that, I don't know, that a sip of wine in a very good Holy Communion or Mass is public drunkenness or something. It's like that. It's as bizarre to a person who knows Tantra well and who's been training it for 20 or 30 years. It's like someone saying to you, did you hear? They're all getting drunk over in the Catholic Church. And you're like, well, how? You know, they take a sip out of this gold cup. You know, and you're like, it's just bizarre that it got that name in the West. It's like some kind of demon thing. Okay. Anyway, Tantra is very much thinking that the guy serving the salads and the lady serving the soup are Chakrasamvara and his consort. And you test the waters. How's the soup today? You got to put a little emphasis on soup. You know, and then they go, you know, it's divine. You know, like that. Okay. Then if you're really smart, you get down on your knees and beg them to take you to paradise. Then they say, you're already there. Okay. One day we sent out all the tantric students to do that. We had some interesting things happen. I think Mercedes is almost crated off to the insane asylum.
Rebecca showed up about the insane.
There were like 25 ladies in the JCPenney's trying to call up. Anyway. All right. Drupa Sangye Choki Tukun Namba Chen. On the sixth tier of petals. I promised you a break in 2 minutes. Okay. On the sixth tier are Buddhas. Chokituku means Koch classic Buddha, Gautama Buddha form that you see in the statues. Okay. It, in Tibetan, it's called the supreme emanation, Chokituku. Okay. Dumbar, on the seventh tier are Changsem, Bodhisattvas. Gyepa, on the eighth tier are Rangel, self-made Buddhas, lower practitioners. Gupar, on the ninth are the listeners, also lower track practitioners. On the tenth are Pawo Kando. Pawo Kando always means Pawo Dang Pa Mo. Okay? Pawo Kando means, what is that pose? Hero. What, how does it, Vira Bhadrasana, right? So Vira means Pawo. It means hero or warrior. Pawo Pamo means male and female warriors, okay? These are tantric deities, okay, or tantric helpers who help you in your tantric practice. Chuchikpar, on the 11th tier. Oh, by the way, Kondro in Sanskrit is? Sky goer in Sanskrit is? Dakini. Okay. I was so happy when the backpack company came out called Dakin. I went out and bought one right away. Chuchikpar, on the 11th level, Chusung is Chukyong, same. Dharma? Pala, Dharma Pala. Adapa is very interesting. It came into English in pastor, meaning a protector of the flock. So anyway, Dharma Pala means a Dharma protectors, okay? Selmdap. There are two forms of Dharma which they protect. Do you remember from the end of the Abhidhamma Kosha?
The written Dharma?
Yeah, physical Dharma, books, CDs, videos, and then there's the Dharma in people's hearts and understandings that they have, right? So Dharma protectors are protecting both. They are protecting the physical manifestations of the Dharma by inputting ancient classic texts at great personal suffering for 25 years. And then they're protecting it in people's hearts, right? Like they're careful what they say about the Dharma. They teach people carefully. They teach people to practice what they're learning. And most importantly, to be a nice person. That's protection of the Dharma. All right, we'll take a break there. We got 15 minutes. I propose you just ask me some good questions. If you don't have any good questions, I'll keep going. One, two, huh?
What does Avon
mean? We're getting there. It'll come. Did he mention it already? Avon is a very famous Sanskrit word in Tantra. Okay, it's a very, very famous Sanskrit thing, and I'm not going to tell you what it means. Okay, I did it in the Tantra course, and you guys had, I think, a couple hours on it, but it also has a higher meaning than that. But I think you should work on it. You should just kind of try to figure out what it is. Okay, seriously, I'm not being cute. It has a very high meaning, and I think if you work on it, you can find it. And it's more valuable, I think, if you find it yourself. In that, it means thus. Evam in the Heart Sutra. Evam Maya Shrutam means I heard it thus. Which calls back to the times that the sutras weren't written down in the time of the Buddha. They were written down years later. And they had a couple big meetings, and then people got up and said, "This is how I heard it." So how I is Evam. Like that. John, did you have a question?
The Jason Hartman saga, or the Jesus saga, seems to have a lot of this, but kind of shortened, a little bit more condensed. Could you comment on that? And the second part of the question is, still using that saga almost every morning, but when do you transition from that to some of the meditations that you're doing?
So I think it was for somebody in Chicago. No, it was for a nunnery in Houston or something, right? Yeah, they asked for a practice along these lines that was Christian-based. I think it was 5 or 6 years ago, maybe longer. But yeah, a lot of that came out of this. And I think you'll appreciate it more when you hear the full, if we have time to do the full recitation of the 6 preliminaries in Guadalajara. You'll see that there's even more. You'll appreciate the combination then. As far as going deeper on a certain sadhana or something like that, or going into these visualizations, for you personally, given what's happening in your family life and stuff, I would say concentrate. He has an illness in his family. So I'd say concentrate on the root teacher. And if it's Jesus, that's fine. So I would try to have a personal relationship with that being. And then it's very proper to make requests of them. And I think there's an important thing at the end of a sadhana like that I would suggest the next step is to you bring them into your body. And they stay in the heart chakra, and they're there throughout the day. And you try to do this visualization at odd moments during the day. Like, I know you get stuck in airports probably a lot. And instead of sitting at the gate and kind of wasting your time and reading USA Today leftovers that people put on the seats, you can, when you get odd moments in your life, try to speak to the person in your heart, and I would say Jesus, right? So you speak to that person and you can make requests of them for other people. And personally, I would do that. I think the routing is always, they get smaller. They've been facing you. They get smaller. They rise up in the air. They get smaller. They come to the top of your head and they come down your central channel to the heart chakra, and then you keep them there, and then you check in with them during the day, especially if you have special prayers or things you want to happen. I think to ask them, keep asking them, and that's all. Okay. Yes, Mom.
Given all the teachings that you gave in Glendale and then all of this, is it a problem for a person if their heart lama changes masks, you know, if they're understanding the essence of who and what their heart lama is that problematic?
I didn't catch it. Their heart lama changes what?
Masks. So like a different body, a different.
Oh yeah. I don't think it's at all a problem. I think as you go through life, major parts of your life, I think it's quite natural that your heart lama might shift to another form. And I think it's important to acknowledge that that could happen. And then not to get all conflicted about it. You know, like I used to pledge allegiance to this person, and now I'm pledging allegiance to this person. And am I betraying the first person, or am I a bad person, or like that? I mean, don't switch horses easily midstream, because that also gets to be an obstacle. But if your heart, if after much careful thought and consideration, it's like getting into a new relationship, right? You should do it gradually and don't make sudden decisions. But when you feel that this other person is opening your heart more than the first person did, yeah.
That you're not really sensing that they have changed. Just that.
Oh yeah, it's just a form.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's what I mean. You have to be careful not to get into that state of mind. of thinking that you're shifting allegiances. You have to be very careful to avoid that state of mind. You have to believe that they have chosen to shift for you, and that they have shifted for you. And if you second guess yourself, that's a negative karma, to second guess yourself. If you decide that they have shifted forms, then go with it happily, and don't feel conflicted about it. I don't think it's a problem. I think honesty is paramount. You know, like you just say, "Well, I love you, and I've always respected you, and now Lama is appearing to me in another form, and I thank you, and I love you, and I'll always help you." You know, I think honesty, to be upfront, is nice. Like, and if you're up, if you're very sincere about it, then it's a very smooth thing. Okay, that's all. There shouldn't be any kind of like. There's two other options, right? One is you have a rupture, and the other is that you just don't say anything and you disappear. And I think the middle way is better, where you say. You just say, I'm relating more. There are some students in our class here. There's a Tibetan Lama in Phoenix that they were attracted to. And I was like, so go for it, you know. And that's, I think people should settle where their heart is most comfortable. And as a teacher, I think you have to encourage that, you know. You say, if you would like to explore some other path, or you'd like to explore some other teacher, then God bless you, and if I can help you, let me know. And if you want to come back, you're welcome back. And if you don't want to come back, then, you know, I'm very proud of your progress. And you know, be happy for them. People should fall out to someone that they relate to. And that should be that way, that everyone ends up with the person that's closest to them in their heart. And they are not restricted from seeing another teacher or something like that. Because it doesn't work anyway, so you must well just be happy and say, you know. I had one yoga teacher was complaining to me that in the city where they live, all of their students had like left them and betrayed them and opened their own yoga studios. And I said, well, why don't you just think of it as you've mothered all these birds in the nest, and then you kick them out, and they go start a competing yoga studio. And you could take pride in that, and you can say, they're my kids, you know, and look at them, look how good they're doing, you know. And I think that's a much healthier thing, and it's true, you know. So train them to where they can, and when they want to jump out of the nest, then support them and be happy. And you can take credit, you know. So I think that's healthy. And they won't be the same as you. And they'll do things different, and they should. And it should fit their personality. And they should teach in their way. So, and if they misbehave, you should yell at them. And you know, if they misbehave, you should assert your guru-ness and criticize them or spank them or whatever you have to do. Next question. Yeah.
With the sort of putting on a play, you sort of came down here and sort of played out this show of these deeds of how he got enlightened. And he was already enlightened. So is there a story of like...
Oh, the first enlightenment story?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great question. Nobody asked me that. So Rob said, you say that the 12 deeds done by the Buddha in this world were only a play, and that Lord Buddha had actually gotten enlightened in someplace else zillions of years before. It's a beautiful, beautiful story. To say it briefly, because we only have 3 minutes, because I got to go see my girlfriend, my 86-year-old girlfriend. I love the story, and it's in course number 17 of the Diamond Mountain courses. I translated it, and it's from the secret books of Gyume Tantra College. Basically, our Buddha was on another world. He was about to achieve enlightenment, but he had some very peculiar obstacles, which at that point are incredibly subtle, right? It's like quarks and protons, you know, compared to Grand Canyon, you know, like in his mind, there were extremely, extremely subtle obstacles going on, you know, on an atomic level, right? So he was stuck. And it was like during the latter part of the day. And then they say a mass of previously enlightened beings, okay? So we believe that once you get enlightened, then your mind sort of enters a network of enlightened beings, like an internet, and you're a new server. And then you're connected to all these other beings. We don't believe they become one person. We believe they retain their individual personalities, but they are all equally enlightened, and they communicate with each other on a spontaneous level throughout the universe. So a big bunch of them considered the problem of this guy getting stuck, which of course they had foreseen a zillion years before, because to them a zillion years later and today is the same thing. So they weren't surprised. And they said, he needs a woman. He needs a partner. He needs the energy of a female mind to complement his energy. His prana and his mind need a woman's energy for him to go over the top. You know? So then they approached an angel called Tilottama, okay? And she agreed. I guess she liked him, right? And I believe she was also not enlightened at that time. Okay, and then they introduced them to each other, and they liked each other. In the afternoon, then they started practicing together, and then there's a beautiful record of the hours of the day. What do you call it? The watches of the night. There are three watches of the night. And they went through the three watches of the night together, meditating together, practicing together. And then at daybreak, as the sun broke the horizon, they got enlightened in each other's arms, you know, which I think is really beautiful. And that would make a good movie also. We're going to have to make like 25 movies, right? But anyway... that's how this Buddha got enlightened. And then there's lots of interesting... There's a sadhana to Tilottama. There's a way to call her. You have to go to a mountaintop on a certain day. You have to make certain offerings. You do certain mantras. And you can meet her or ask her to come and have a relationship. Get to know her. And she will help you in things you want to accomplish. Her mudra is, guess what? Okay? Very interesting, because this is very important in our immediate lineage. And like that, she has her own special mudra and things like that. So it'd be interesting. No one's ever explored that story. No one's ever translated it, or you won't find it anywhere on the internet, I don't think. But it would be interesting... to at least write an essay about it by taking all the selections from scripture and putting them together into a nice little, what do you call it? There's a French word for a short, nice vignette. Yeah, vignette. It'd be nice to make a little vignette about Tilottama and Gautama, okay? That would be really nice. Because no one's ever really... And those sources are difficult to get a hold of. They are part of the secret books of Gyumei Tantra College. Actually, the Lama who spoke them never wrote them down, and one of his disciples did later. So, but there are many references. Jetsun Kapa refers to Tilottama, and like that. So that's a good place to go home. Good night.